Log Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Hey, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there've been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Friday night edition of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be another great show. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click, tag, and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And tonight, we're speaking with Rick Herring and Jeanette Martinez, the two candidates that made it to the District 11 runoff. District 11 is a newly created district with many challenges. We will hear how these two plan to address these challenges if elected. They both have very impressive bios, and tonight I'm going to share just some of their bios with you. Let's start with Rick Herring. Rick Herring is a neighborhood volunteer leader and activist in Fort Worth for over 30 years. Raised in the Riverside community where five generations of his family have lived, Fort Worth ISD graduate, Texas Westerland graduate with a BBA in international business, has been in the retirement planning industry for over 37 years, was VP of Wells Fargo for 25 years, currently a fiduciary and regulatory consultant with Principal Financial Group, was president of the Oakhurst Neighborhood Association. He has served the Fort Worth, served on, rather, the Fort Worth Zoning Commission, the Fort Worth Planning Commission, the Fort Worth Historic and Cultural Landmarks Commission, as well as the Tarrant County Black Historical and Genealogical Society and Scenic Fort Worth. Rick is a deacon at the First Christian Church of Fort Worth, where he also serves as chairman of the Outreach Committee. Rick has a partner, Mr. Ken Hicks, and is the father of two and the grandfather of two as well. Jeanette Martinez, currently she's the executive administrator for the Tarrant County Precinct 1 Commissioner, Roy Brooks. She graduated UTA with a master's in public administration and also Texas Westerland with a bachelor's in science. She served on nonprofits such as the Girl Scouts of Texas, Oklahoma Plains Vice President as Vice President, Pathfinders as a board member, Survive and Thrive Education as a board member, Tarrant County Government Board. She served on the Resource Connection Advisory Committee as the chairperson, Building Line Adjustment Board as a chair, Tarrant Special Events Foundation, past president, as well as she served the City of Fort Worth's Community Action Partners on that board. Also, she was a person who served on the renaming of the Jefferson Davis Park, Rosemont Neighborhood Association. She served as treasurer and is currently an advisor. Jeanette is married to her husband, Eric, and the mother of three. Again, y'all, I told y'all, they got some very impressive bios. So I see them on the line tonight, so they're going to just tell us just a little bit more about what those bios didn't say. Y'all, those are very impressive bios. Ms. Jeanette Martinez and Mr. Rick Heron, good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for having us.
Oh, not a problem. Listen, there was a lot of interest in this show. I mean, I'm telling y'all. And so obviously this is a very hot race. Your bios told us a lot. But what else can you tell the voters who are going to be going to the polls if they haven't already about you all? We'll start with you, Jeanette.
Well, you did not mention that I'm also a Fort Worth native. I did. I am also a first-generation proud daughter of Mexican immigrants. I went to Fort Worth ISD schools, but I have over a decade of local government experience, so that's working in and working with local government, with our council persons, with our state reps, and even federal with our congresspersons to assist the constituents of in my role of Precinct 1. And a lot of that precinct overlaps this new district, and I have lived, you know, before District 11, you know, was even created, or, you know, we knew the boundaries. I have actually lived and worked on both sides of this district, so I'm very familiar with the area, working with individuals already when they're in most need, or if they have any issues that we need to help them with through my community service or through my my work. You know, or even, you know, in through the neighborhood association service, just helping them identify services and resources that they need. So I am bilingual, so I will be able to communicate to all corners of this new district. And, you know, just like I said, having lived and worked on both sides, I understand the very different areas, the very diverse communities. And so I'll be able to relate and provide a different perspective that has not been seen by this city on that dais.
Okay. Rick Heron.
Yes, thank you, Carrie. And, again, thanks for having us on tonight. Well, just you said it all, I guess, in the bio about kind of who we are, but just a little bit more about myself. I was raised in a working-class family by a single mom. I've been a single parent myself. I was the first person in my family to go to college, and I worked the whole time to put myself through college. I didn't have the kind of help a lot of folks do, but anyway, made it through, and that was great. And, you know, what I want to bring to District 11, and of course, as we all know, it's a brand new district. It's been over 50 years since Fort Worth has had a new city council district, and it's going to take a lot of work and someone that can forge this district. One thing that this district has in common and that we can build upon is that it's a district of working class and middle class neighborhoods from top to bottom. And that is something that is a commonality throughout the district. My background, as you said, is really working in neighborhoods. And I do believe that neighborhoods are the building blocks of our cities. And that's where citizens are most effectively able to raise their concerns, work with other folks in their neighborhoods, and then present those to their city council reps. So my number one priority is protecting and strengthening and improving our neighborhoods of District 11, because all of them need some level of help and assistance. And these are the neighborhoods that have consistently and generally been overlooked by City Hall and by our city government. Another thing that I really am anxious to work on is managing Fort Worth's growth, because all of the growth going on outside of the loop is, you know, it's just exponential. And they need roads, they need schools, they need libraries, they need fire stations, but all that can't be done at the expense of those of us who are in the central city and who need resources for our needs as well. I want to work towards a fairer tax system, and there's some ways we can talk about that. And I do want to support public safety, because most people, including myself, feel like, you know, public safety is the number one job of any city government. And I see my role as a city council person in setting policy, in providing leadership, in providing visioning and goals. And many of Ms. Martinez's attributes are admirable with the work she's done in the county and connecting folks to resources. But in my opinion, that's really a job more for the council person staff and other city staff, and not necessarily the council person themselves, although they need to be totally accessible to all citizens.
Okay. You know, she brought up a point a minute ago, Mr. Herring, about the fact that she was bilingual. We understood that when they created districts 10 and 11, they, you know, kept saying that they wanted it to be districts that were led by a Hispanic representation. That said, how will you address those people who do not speak English in your district?
Right. Well, that is a great question. And yes, excuse me, District 11 was created as a Hispanic opportunity district, meaning that it was, you know, set up so that there was the opportunity for a Hispanic person to be elected. And of course, that's, as we see, that's still an option. But for myself personally, you know, I wanted to be able to represent my own neighborhood, and I felt like I had a right to run as an American citizen and a citizen of Fort Worth to represent my own community. I do realize the language barrier can sometimes be an issue, but I do plan to hire both of my district aides will be bilingual. That's the number one requirement for their jobs. And I would just like to point out that, you know, we have a couple of districts now, Districts 8 and District 9, which are heavily Hispanic, if not majority Hispanic, and neither of the current representatives for those districts are bilingual, and I just don't believe that's hurt their representation in their districts.
Gotcha. Okay. Jeanette, we know that, you know, based on your bio, that you work for Commissioner Brooks, and for whatever reason, there's a lot of conversation about whether or not you plan to stay on with his office and be a council person as well. So how will you, if you plan to do that, balance both an 8-to-5 at the commissioner's office and also be a council person in the hours that they require?
So, you know, going into this, making this decision, I realized how much time is needed for this council seat. So that is something I did discuss, of course, with Family First and Commissioner Brooks. And I also did my due diligence and talked to the city attorney, the Fort Worth city attorney, and the Tarrant County District Attorney's Office. So we did not see any conflict that would come about it. You know, it is my boss and my, you know, our, you know, it's really up to him how we manage my time. So I will be able to make it work just like I have anything in my life. While I was, you know, a single mom, I was going to school full time. I was working full time. I made it work, and I'll be able to do that again. And so, you know, I did think about it for a long time and, you know, realized this, I had this sense of urgency to run for this seat. And I didn't make this decision lightly. And it's something that I'm going to be able to do and that I will be able to do successfully.
So, well, let me piggyback on that question. So is there a set, are there set hours for the commissioner's job or your job as a commissioner's office?
Yeah. I am a salary remotely. And there has been questions about me, you know, how am I going to be able to go to commissioner's court and a city hall, you know, they are both on Tuesdays. And really, I do not need to be present in commissioner's court every Tuesday. I am not the commissioner. He does have another executive administrator who will be with him. So we did talk about this.
You're getting very low.
I'm sorry?
You faded out or were fading out, but now we can hear you. So there, if I heard you correctly, you said that there you don't have to be present at commissioner's court, and there is another executive assistant that will be there.
Administrator.
Administrator, I'm sorry, that will be there. So is that the only time, though, that there may be a conflicting schedule issue?
Well, like I said, I'm salaried. I work at all hours, and I can work remotely. So, you know, I'll make it work. I can't tell you what conflicts are going to come up if you know, I'll just have to prioritize. That's what you do in life and at work. So.
Gotcha. It was just a question that someone had submitted to me, and I was just trying to make certain that I got that asked. So, another thing, y'all, and I didn't ask y'all this prior to, like I said, there was a lot of interest in the show, and there are some people who had questions. Do you all, are you all okay with taking questions, or would you like to just proceed as we're going without taking questions from the audience?
Well, I'm fine with questions from the audience. That's been one of the best parts of the campaign is engaging with citizens, even if we don't always agree on everything. But and, Carrie, I didn't know exactly how the format was going to be, but do I have an opportunity to respond to Ms. Martinez's comments about her her job with the county?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, I just want to say that, yes, I admire her. As she said, she's, you know, balanced everything in her life, as we all have to do. But, you know, people have been talking about this, and I have very pointedly not made an issue of it with my campaign because I didn't want to. But, you know, a lot of other people are talking about it, not only in District 11, but outside of District 11. Tarrant County taxpayers have brought it up. And I do find it curious that the, you know, the executive administrator of a county commissioner's office won't have to be in commissioner's court, which is on the same day as the city council meetings. And, you know, I've worked with my city council folks for so many years and had great relationships with them for the most part, but I know how much I've called on them just as an ordinary citizen, also in the leadership positions I've had. And I'm sure they were ready to throttle me many times for bugging them so much, but multiply that by, you know, hundreds and thousands of constituents that want to talk to their city council person that are expecting to see them. This isn't just a job to show up on Tuesday and you're done. There are numerous committees, city council committees, that council persons are required and expected to serve on. There's meetings with constituents. There's meetings with developers. There are meetings with other boards that are ancillary to the city council, such as North Texas Council of Governments, the DFW Airport Board, Meacham Airport Board, et cetera, et cetera. And it really is a full-time job. And not to mention the evening commitments of meeting with neighborhood associations. This is a large district, 95,000 people. Everybody is going to want to be engaged because it is new, and everyone is going to be wanting to have their council person be out with them. So I just think it's going to be a very tall order to have two full-time jobs. I do as well. I'm still working, and as Ms. Martinez said, she has great flexibility with her job. I also have great flexibility with mine. The difference is my full-time job that I get paid for is not a taxpayer-funded job that taxpayers are expecting me to fulfill.
Mm. Jeanette, would you like to respond?
Say he has a full-time job. He also has kids. We all have commitments. And, you know, I'll be able to make it work. I don't see why. If the DA's office and the city attorney's office didn't have an issue, you know, I mean, I guess I just don't get it. But, honestly, I don't get it. A lot of the projects that the city and the county do, there is no direct beneficial financiary gain. So anything that the county and the city go into, they go in as a partnership and into the one project. So there's no crossing over of money. But, you know, I'm really great at time management, and I will make it work.
Okay. Well, she answered that for anyone who had questions about will she be able to balance both the job at the Commissioner's Court and the City Council. She said she will be able to. So we will move forward. So, Jeanette, you said you were very familiar with District 11. So tell us some of the challenges that you see in District 11.
And I didn't touch on my top three priorities. I am going to focus on creating safe, clean neighborhoods, and that is working directly with the police department, the neighborhood patrol officers, and code enforcement. And in those neighborhoods where there is not a good relationship or no relationship, there are, of course, neighborhood associations who have great relationships with their representatives from the city and NPO and code enforcement. And these neighborhood associations, I've noticed that while they do really great work, it's a very small percentage of the neighborhood that they're speaking for. They don't engage the entire neighborhood. And that could be just the residents don't want to have to deal with that, you know, because it's a little political in neighborhood associations. So I want to reach, of course, have a great relationship with the neighborhood associations, but also the entire neighborhood. And there also could be language barriers that are keeping people from being more involved. So I'm going to create opportunities to outreach through different platforms, whether it's social media, newsletter, town halls, and just anything that we can think of, and, of course, in the various languages. I also want to fix our streets and infrastructure. That's streets, that's sidewalks, that's drainage, that's lighting. Lighting will also help with deterring crime in areas where it's darker and people have been wanting street lights, and also focus on reducing our property taxes because, you know, there's a lot of folks that are being taxed out of their homes, and we want to try to reduce that. And, of course, advocate the other entities to reduce that as well. That's our school tax and also, you know, with the county as well. But, you know, I live in Rosemont right now, and we have, while we did have a public improvement grant that was able to fix a lot of the streets, on my side of the neighborhood or across the railroad tracks on the west end, there was no street improvements. We didn't get Wi-Fi, and our neighborhood further is also Rosemont West and North. They didn't get any of the improvements either. It was kind of like 33% of the neighborhood did. So our streets need to improve. Also, when I lived off of Miller Martin while I was going to Texas Wesleyan, you know, a lot of the streets, and of course, I've been canvassing throughout this campaign, and I've noticed, you know, where there has been lack of investment in certain neighborhoods. And so just really fighting to get the investment that this new district needs. Mr. Herring did share that a lot of the neighborhoods have been, seem to have been like ignored or underserved. And so I want to focus on specifically that the street improvements and educating the communities of the services and resources that are out there that they can take advantage of. There are rehab programs where people can fix their homes up or make them more energy. And, you know, there's a lot of folks, first-generation residents that don't know about these homestead exemptions, taking advantage of stuff like that. So really, my passion is education, social services, and really pushing for that throughout the district.
Gotcha. Mr. Herring, what challenges do you see in District 11?
And we only have 2 hours, Gary? There's a lot. And, again, there's no use in beating a dead horse, but the areas that make up the new District 11 have been those areas that have traditionally been overlooked and underserved by City Hall for any myriad of reasons. And, you know, we could discuss that for hours. But I do agree infrastructure is a big issue in some of the older neighborhoods. The streets are bad. Unfortunately, we only fix streets and replace streets every 4 years through bond programs. So there's always a dogfight for which district is going to have streets repaired. And I've been through that fight many times before, fighting for my own neighborhood, and I will be right back in the fray when I'm representing District 11. But there are some things that we can do right away that are part of the city budget. In this last city budget for 2023, there was increased funding for streetlights, for, you know, to get those repaired more quickly for when citizens call in for those. Also, the hitting on code compliance is so important because, for me, if you don't have a clean community, you don't have a safe community. And that is a challenge to our older neighborhoods, whether it's a lack of reporting, whether it's a lack of diligence by the city. I don't know, but I plan to make that a priority and be on that because, again, I've lived that. I live in a neighborhood that has been underserved, and if we don't fight for ourselves, no one else is going to. So I understand and experience the frustration that comes from not having your needs addressed. You know, we always talk, and all candidates have to do this in any campaign like this, but we talk about our high-level priorities. And Jeanette and I both said ours, you know, mine were neighborhoods, working on the city's growth, et cetera. But I've developed a list through my own knowledge of the district and talking to constituents throughout the campaign, people that actually live in these neighborhoods. I've got a list of 14 things that I outlined on a map that I want to start working on day one, on June 11th, the day after the election. And I've, you know, shared that map with those priorities. It includes a number of things, improving some very dangerous intersections that can be done very easily with current funding through transportation and public works. There's a few things on my list that have to be accomplished through bond programs, which, again, only come around every 4 years. But, you know, there's a lot of inappropriate zoning in our district that's already on the ground, but also that's being proposed. You know, the folks in the Echo Heights neighborhood in southeast Fort Worth have developed a wonderful coalition to fight any more industrial encroachment into their area. And I've been working with them on that and have attended many of their meetings. And, you know, with my background in zoning in Fort Worth, have an understanding of some of those issues. But I am working with them on that, and I think that's a real key area. But there's a lot of issues. I'll just mention one more because it really was near and dear to my heart, and not in a good way. But I'm a book lover, a bibliophile, if you want to call me that. And I love our public libraries. And the public library in Southside was taken away from the community with no forewarning and no discussion with the community. And I want to make sure that they get their branch library back. And I think that's very important, and I am going to make that a priority.
Wow. Jeanette, you didn't mention Echo Heights. Have you taken the toxic tour in Echo Heights?
I have not taken the toxic tour, but that is one thing on my priority list if elected. Of course, I definitely want to work on revitalizing our historic corridors, bringing a grocery store to the east side. Of course, bringing a library back to Worth Heights community. You know, I grew up in the area. That's the library I, you know, used to take books out from. And so that is very personal to me, and it will be a fight starting day one. And, of course, Echo Heights. There is environmental concerns, and I already have ideas of what I would like to see. One would be including a barrier, and then one implementing, and another one implementing, working with the property owners there to prevent runoff from going into the neighborhood, whether it's through a new drainage system, just different ideas that I have. And, you know, while being in the community and talking to community members, you know, I have a list of notes. Of course, you know, streets infrastructure, like I said, is another top priority. And I've already made a list of some streets that really need to be redone or, you know, just have some major repairs. And along the way, you know, I've seen issues just recently canvassing here in the Rosemont neighborhood. There was a neighbor that had shared that his front door neighbor had tripped on the sidewalk because it had the tree roots had raised it so much. And so, you know, while I was there, I took a picture. I reported it as an ADA hazard. And a few days later, they came out and repaired it. So, you know, I'm not waiting on certain things. You know, I've already reached out to the city. And you know, sometimes it's the county because it's property tax. See if we can have some of these folks set up payment plans for their taxes or, you know, there's somebody that had applied for social service, community action partner assistance, and they hadn't heard back, so was able to connect them there. You know, stuff I'm already familiar with, like I said, working with city council staff or state reps and help them, you know, in those areas of need.
Mm-hmm. On Wednesday night, the city sponsored a forum for the finalists in the OPM director's job, or for the OPM's director job. I think I'm saying that right. Anyway, for anybody who's not familiar with OPM, that's the Office of the Police Oversight Monitor. That's it. There's been a lot of talk on social media that even though the two women were very strong candidates, they really didn't feel like anything was going to change by changing the person that was sitting in that seat. That said, a lot of people still feel the need for an independent police review board. So are you all for or against an independent citizens review board? Mr. Herring, we'll start with you.
Sure. Thank you, Carrie. And let me say real quickly before answering that, I thought that both of the finalists, Ms. Phillips and Ms. Secundi, if I'm not butchering her name, and I hope not, if I am, I apologize, but I thought they both did a good job, and I thought they're both highly qualified. So I think whatever decision is made, whoever is ultimately hired, we will have a very capable advocate in that office. As far as the independent oversight board, yes, I have been on public record that I am in favor of that. Now, I will tell you that the proposal that Councilman Nettles put forward, I was not able to support, and for one reason. And let me just expound on that a minute, and then I'll tell you the reason. But when they were having that debate, the proponents, Councilman Nettles and others, were likening that independent review board to other commissions and boards that the city has. I don't think that was a good comparison because the independent oversight board will be so much more important. Not that zoning and library and parks and all those other boards aren't important, but this is a different level of importance. And but since they did compare them to those other boards, it was said over and over, you know, they'll be just like any other city board. Well, every city commission and board has some level of, the members have some level of subject matter expertise on that board. And the one thing that I could not go along with on Council Nettles' proposal was the exclusion of anyone who had any ties to law enforcement, even if it had been in the past or a family member or something like that. And I do understand why he wanted to include that, but I just feel like there needs to be some level of citizen subject matter expertise and not depending on city staff to provide that expertise. But I think, in my opinion, they could have compromised or worked that out that night at city council and come up and pass that proposal. That was my only sticking point with it, and I'll just leave it there. I am in favor of the independent board. I know Chief Noakes is trying to do the advisory board or whatever it's called. I couldn't fully support that because I think those members should be appointed by the city council and not the police chief himself. But I do think he is making steps in the right direction. I think he's made a lot of improvements. But to answer your question, I am in favor of an independent board and would support that if the proposal comes around again. And let me caveat that, depending on how it was structured. But overall, my answer is yes.
Okay. Jeanette?
Well, Mr. Herring, if it stays the same, then a no is a no. But I would be able to support the police advisory board. The option for the city council to be able to appoint their own appointee to that board, and then with the task to create for that group to create an oversight board. I had, and I haven't thoroughly read it, but there was a place where it said that felons would be able to serve and as a victim of, I was a victim of rape and I was also a victim of, sexual assault and, I was molested as a child. And so, just having that, somebody on there that would have, been convicted of those felonies, I don't see myself supporting it. Because not all felonies are the same, right? There's different levels. Mm-hmm. So I would have to just confirm that certain levels of felonies were not being able to serve on that board. I'm sure things have to change for this to pass, and I know it's something that's not going to go away. And of course, I will be having those conversations and see how what we can do to make it work.
Now, excuse me for being confused, but are you saying yes to that you would vote for an independent citizens review board, or are you saying yes, you are for an advisory board, or both?
I would task the advisory board to create that independent board.
Okay, so the advisory board would then be appointed by the chief,
I would push the city council to I would push the chief to allow that city council have each city council person have one appointee on that advisory board, on his advisory board.
So there's 19 seats, and so you're saying, well, first of all, the chief works for the city, which is the mayor and the city council, not the other way around. So I don't know that they would need his permission, if that makes sense. But I see what you're saying. So, okay. But, yeah, so you feel like the advisory board should be picked by, or some of the advisory board should be picked by the council, and then the advisory board should then choose the citizens that are going to be on the independent citizens review board.
I would hope that each council person gets an appointee, even if they have to increase the number of those on the advisory board.
Okay, interesting. So I asked you all the question earlier, and I think Mr. Herring said, yes, I didn't get your answer. Are you all willing to take questions, Jeanette, or do you just want to proceed as we're going?
Well, I did mention, I didn't mention here, but I did let you know that I am caring for my mom and I need to leave my sister at 8 o'clock. She had knee replacement surgery last week, so we have to do therapy and dinner. So I will have to log off at 8.
Okay. Listen, well then, those that have questions, if I'm going to open the phone line for my co-host, Mr. Chris and Adrian. Good evening, y'all. She only has till 8, so need to move quickly.
Hey, Carrie, I have Manuel on my line as well.
Okay. Hi, Manuel. Do you have a question,
Carrie,
for Christina?
I'll be real quick. I don't have a question. I'm first and foremost to both of you. Congratulations in your desire to serve Fort Worth, and you know, to make this new district what it should be, because we know it's a new district that's pretty much broken down from a previous district, and I feel like the council member who served and represented a majority of that district for the last 10 years, she hasn't done anything that says that, you know, she's been there. But anyway, I digress from that. All I say as an individual, I'm not in you all's district, but I am one of the voices, many voices that address redress council, you know, on a consistent basis. So all I would ask for as a council representative is whoever's elected, please be yourself, have your own voice, and don't be swayed or dictated to by those who have been in those seats, serving in those seats for whatever time frame they've been serving in. I feel like both of you have been in the field of service, and you have the qualifications to serve. But I think more than anything, District 11 is going to lead a council representative who's going to have their is first going to be about the constituents before business developers or special interests or anything of that nature. You got to put the constituents first. Have your own voice and just basically stand on principles. And I think, Mr. Herring, you already spoke as it relates to the disaster that's continuing to go on in the Echo Heights Stop 6 corridor. I know Ms. Martinez, you said you haven't had an opportunity to take the tour, but it's not taking nothing from that. But for either of you, know that is an important issue. I will hope that you all will, because at the last council, one of the last previous council meetings, they were asking that no more industrialization comes to that area. No more companies should be able to set up shop over there. So if nothing else, I hope you all can. You don't have to do it on this show, because you have to answer them, not me. I'm not in your district, but hopefully you can stand on that and not allow that industrialization, any more industrialization, to come over and destroy that area. But again, thank you both for coming on, and I digress, Carrie. Thank you, Carrie.
Is it all right for me to make a comment to the gentleman's comment?
Sure.
Yeah, and thank you for those comments. And all I want to say is that I can guarantee you I'm going to be my own man, and that's why, you know, some people may not want to see me in that seat, because, you know, we all know a lot of development that comes forward in Fort Worth is not good development, and it's not good for our older neighborhoods. And they already know that I'm willing to stand up and fight and say this is bad development, because I did it last year when a developer wanted to put 3 four-story warehouses along Beach Street right at the entrance to Gateway Park. My council person, who I always had a good relationship with, was fully in support of that. And I went toe-to-toe with them, head-to-head, to prevent that from happening. Now, obviously not by myself. We built a good coalition with a lot of neighborhood leaders from my area, from Meadowbrook, from organizations that were opposed to that. But I was able to take the lead and get that started. And that's just an example of to show you I'm no yes man, and I will stand up or stand against development that I think is bad for the neighborhood, no matter how many so-called tax dollars come along with it.
Jeanette, do you want to respond to that, or you want to take the next question?
Yeah, definitely. You know, as somebody that works with constituents every day. You know, I am here to listen. I'm here to learn, and I will be here to serve, and just want to improve the quality of life of, you know, the constituents in District 11 and throughout the city. You know, whatever we do in District 11 is going to benefit the city. And so just if I need to stop certain development to improve quality of life, I will do that.
Christopher Marino.
Howdy, Carrie.
Okay,
I'm just going to come out real quick. I would have liked to be able to ask a question, but, I mean, I'm reading this straight up as far as the police issue goes, and I don't want anybody to under – look, Fort Worth is my hometown. I was born John Peter Smith Hospital in 1975. We can get into some more of that later. But here's what I'm going to say. The POA sway – and the POA payola is a no-go. And what I hear coming from you, Ms. Martinez, is an uninformed reading of the script that's going on. We have a very big crisis in Fort Worth in city leadership. And this is not personal at all. But what I can tell you is that, you know, we hear this national thing talking about George Floyd, okay? And we hear a lot of we've heard about Tyree Nichols and all of this. Well, listen, you know, and I don't mean to exaggerate, but Fort Worth has at least 10 or 15. We had a Tatiana Jefferson, we had Christopher Lowe, we had Sherrall, and there's some factology going on there. But what I'm hearing from you right now is it's like Carrie pointed out earlier. I saw Neil Noakes come in when he's talking about the advisory board, and I was simply offended because he came in there, and this tells you something about the Fort Worth way, about Fort Worth city leadership. The city council members and the mayor and the city manager let the police chief of the Fort Worth department, subordinate, come in and basically punk them out. And that's wrong. He should have got told to back just to go away. That you don't come in here and tell us what our options are. From you ain't in command of policy. You are the police chief, and you serve at the will of the people and the will of the city council. And that was a problem that I have. And it's not personal about Mr. Noakes, about Chief Noakes, okay? It really isn't. But I'm just going to admit to you there is a sordid history, especially that's peaked over what happened with Halstead, a transition to Fitzgerald, and now the OPOM, and it's over. I mean, we've got the confer and the meet and confer agreement coming up next summer. So whatever, and I'm hoping out of the two of you, this is a runoff. What I'm hoping to see is, and I'm feeling the vibe with Mr. Harry. What I'm hoping to see is that somebody's going to come into City Hall and they're not going to get on the bandwagon, because everybody who was on this last, there's a bandwagon going on, a POA bandwagon going on, and a Fort Worth, a Downtown Inc. bandwagon going on, and that's a problem. And I respect, and I hope that you're being genuine. And I know that one person can't come in there and just be a firebrand, but I hope that we can have out of one of you two, that somebody's going to come in there and say it's time to stop, because there is a lot of stuff going wrong here, and that's all I'll say for now. We can move on to a different topic.
Jeanette, I'm going to piggyback off of something he said. You mm-hmm. are, if I'm reading correctly, are endorsed by the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, the Fort Worth Police Department, and the Fort Worth Firefighters. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So when he's talking about the POA, do you feel like it's a conflict of interest to be voting on police issues and be endorsed by the Fort Worth POA?
When I accepted the endorsement, of course, I had, you know, of course had to accept. Not had, but, you know, they offered their endorsement, and I said, yeah. And I am my own person. You know, I'm going to have to always say this because, you know, somebody's always going to come at me. I am my own person. That I, by accepting that, I did not agree to anything. It is simply a understanding that we will communicate, that if I have any issues, that they will call me if they have any concerns. I mean, if I can call them, of course. As a, of course, minority Latin woman, a Latina, you know, I've definitely throughout the years felt discriminated, I've felt racially profiled. And so I understand the concerns and how some individuals are scared, right? But I also, you know, that we need to hold our police accountable. And if I see something, of course, I'm going to ask. I'm going to make those calls and ask, like, hey, what happened? You know, what's going on? Just like most recently, the incident at La Grande Plaza, where the young man had passed, and they were saying that, you know, it was excessive force. So I right away I called my representative, right away I called the police department and asked those questions. So it will be like that for anything that I feel needs to be called out. And if somebody needs to be held accountable, I will push for that as well. But just to reiterate, you know, I am my own person. I will make my decisions based on what's best for my district and on my values.
Did they give you donations as well as an endorsement, or just an endorsement?
Yes, I got a $5,000 contribution.
Okay. Oh, and you also were supported by
Barry. I'm just gonna. Can I throw one more little piece in there? Here's the thing. Today, Ms. Martinez and Mr. Herring, it's the. I can't even count. I mean, I got. But today there was a on KERA News, which it's a lower tier of the mass media. There was a report about a new lawsuit has been filed this week by an individual who was in handcuffs and he was slammed down on the concrete, shoved from the back, slammed down on the concrete, knocked unconscious by Mr. Mitchell, by Officer Mitchell, Mitchell Miller. Mitchell Miller was one of the five officers who was implicated for falsifying police reports and contributing to the in custody death of Christopher Lowe several years back. Okay? Mm-hmm. These five officers were fired. Okay? And this is what I'm saying. There's Fort Worth, the police department, the police officers in the Fort Worth Police Department, they deserve leadership. They do not need a political patsy, and I've just come to terms with the fact that that's what Mr. Noakes is. And it's not personal, but I've heard it over and over again. Regardless of what the facts are, this, that, whatever, we get a script. Every single time something comes out, it's the verbatim script from that's basically – Neil Noakes is not the defense attorney for these lawyers, for these police officers who commit misconduct. Neil Noakes is the person who is expected by the people to hold them accountable and to discipline them. We were getting that with Chief Fitzgerald, and the Fort Worth POA totally scapegoated and gaslighted the first black police chief in Fort Worth history – knocked him out of office, and it's disgusting when you really dig in. So what I'm saying is we're spending millions of dollars every year. They spent $750,000 litigating against the city council hired outside attorneys, $750,000 of taxpayer dollars to obstructively litigate Chief Fitzgerald's whistleblower lawsuit against the city. There's issues there. Okay, and I'll leave that alone. We can't spend millions of dollars.
Real quick, because I know Miss I know Miss Martinez trying to, huh? What's wrong?
Jesse? Trying to get in here too, but go ahead, man.
Oh no, I was trying to get to because I know Miss Martini is about to get out of there. I was just going to be brief and just let both of them know that, like you say, not looking for like Chris, they're not looking for a firebrand, but just know that the POA plays dirty, and how you vote on that Diaz will trust me, they will not make a slight show. They're not afraid to show that how they feel about it. So just know that they play dirty, and that's all I want to say.
Jesse Taylor, did you have a question?
I did, but let her answer. Let her go ahead and answer what he was talking about.
Okay.
Jeanette? Well, okay. Well, mm-hmm. No, I was just going to reiterate. I'm my own person. I'll stand on my two feet, and I'm not scared of POA. And I'm, like I said, I'm going to vote for what's best for the constituents and on my values.
Okay. Jesse Taylor? Jesse, your question? Jesse Taylor. Okay.
Oh, okay. I got to get this old mute off.
Okay, your question?
Ms. Martinez and Mr. Ricky. Hey, this is Jesse Taylor. I haven't met you guys. I've reached out to both. Yeah, I reached out to both of your camps, and I believe I reached out to you also trying to set up maybe a sit-down. We could sit down and just chop it up over some breakfast or something. But anyway, the other guys, they asked some great questions about our district. But what I want to know is, besides what they talked about, how do you plan on engaging our youth violence in this community right now that's skyrocketing out of control right about now? How do you plan? How to both? And this question to both of you, because our city is like headed towards a little Chicago, and it's like a hush hush thing, but that's exactly what's going on with our youth nowadays. So I'm asking both of you candidates, how do you plan on engaging this? What do you plan on stopping it? And what do you see going in the future?
Mm. Well, I can tell you my ideas, Mr. Taylor. I think, first of all, from a city perspective, and what the city can do with its resources is to make more programs available for our youth, for our young people, especially our young men, in our community centers and our recreation centers, et cetera, to make more programs available. Now, that's just what the city can do from what they already have available. We've got recreation centers and community centers in every neighborhood. Some aren't as great as others, but anyway, we've got them and we've got the facilities. But I do think that the city needs to do a much better job of partnering with some of our nonprofit organizations, such as VIP Fort Worth, that are specifically focused on gun violence among our youth. And VIP Fort Worth, headed by Pastor Mack, is a great organization focusing on the east side. We need to replicate that around the city, and especially in District 11. And Councilman Williams has made proposals for a program. And I would hope that the city would get behind that, because we have to do something to engage our youth, because I agree with you, it's a growing problem and it's a serious problem. And as we head into the summer months and the warm months, it's only going to increase. And I was just today, or actually yesterday, pardon me, speaking with Johnny Muhammad, who's a good friend of mine. We grew up together, and he's actively involved in efforts to stem violence, and specifically gun violence among our young men. So that would be the way that I would first approach it. But quite honestly, I also want to hear from the community and from people like you as to what you see every day, because you may have, you know, much better ideas or other thoughts about how we can do that. And I'm always all ears.
Hey, Mr. Harris.
I'm
sorry, Jeanette's got to get out of here, so let her answer the question because it's almost 8 o'clock.
Gotcha.
Please.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jeanette?
Yeah. I agree with a lot of the stuff that Mr. Herring said, you know, partnering with the organizations that are already out there, our rec centers, but with our trustees as well, with the Fort Worth ISD, they also have a lot of connections in the community and with our nonprofits, of course, but I want to see more mentorship programs specifically for young men, but young women as well too, and try to get guns out of the community as well, create more opportunities for gun buyback programs with the police department or the sheriff's office, whoever it is that we can partner with. And of course, the churches. The churches are a big resource for us, too. So there's lots of stakeholders out there where we can create more programming. If elected, one thing I would be doing is creating internship program where high school or college students, I haven't figured that out yet, or what I can do, but bring them in to the office and teach them about city government, or getting them connected with other offices where they can intern as well. That's something that I have seen that is successful and keeps students busy throughout the summer. So that's on my list to do if elected.
Jeanette, final comments before you leave tonight.
This seat is very important to me, not because I wanted to be the first of anything. I felt this urgency that we need to have somebody up there that can relate to the community, that can communicate with the community, that understands what it's like growing up, with very little resources, that has to figure out the processes. So I want to work with the community, let them know what is out there. After graduating high school, I didn't realize how easy it was going to be to go back to school. It took me 7 years to go back. And we didn't have money, right? So I joined the Marines not knowing that I had a medical condition. So while in basic training, I got a medical discharge. And so when I came back, I was kind of lost. Like, what am I going to do? So I was working, these minimum wage jobs. And when I finally got fed up, I went and enrolled in school, and I was able to get scholarships and grants. Of course, I did have to take out some loans, but, it took me a while took me 5 years to get my bachelor's. But, ever since then, opportunities have come my way, and I've worked my way up. I want to make that process easier for folks. I want to ensure that they have to improve their quality of life, to connect them with programs that are out there, like the Labor Council with their different trade programs, and these individuals come into the workforce at higher wages. There's just so much out there. And I'm ready, like I said before, I'm ready to serve. I want to listen. I want to know the important issues. I want to build this district into a model district and ultimately make Fort Worth a better place. So I'm ready to work, and I'm excited for this opportunity. And then I humbly ask for your vote on June 10th or early voting. Early voting ends June 6th, this Tuesday coming up. Feel free to check out my website. It's Jeanette4FW.com. You'll find my email and my phone number there if you have any questions. You can also find me on social media. I'm on Facebook and Instagram.
And Jeanette, I know you have to leave, but can I respond to one thing, one of the statements you made before you get off?
Sure.
Okay. You said that you had, sort of a burning desire to serve in the seat, but I can't help but point out the fact that, you reached out to me last fall and said you were going to run. Then you dropped out of the race but didn't tell anybody. And then on the last day of filing, you decided to get back into the race. So to me, that just doesn't show a pattern of a burning desire to be in the seat and serve the district. So I just felt like I needed to respond to your comment.
Sure, let me clarify that. So, I realized that my boss may not be in office very much longer, and I wanted to go back to school to create generational wealth for my family, for my children. And so I enrolled at A&M Commerce, taking accounting classes. I wanted to get my bachelor's in accounting to become a CPA. And when I realized that Crystal Galvan wasn't going to be running I didn't think that anybody running, including Mr. Herring, was going to be able to represent this entire district equally. Mr. Herring was a part of the redistricting process. He created a district that diluted the Hispanic representation, so his so he had a better chance at winning. And so that really bothered me. And that is another reason why I ran as well.
Thank you.
Well, I know you got to go, but I've got to respond to that. That is adamantly false and ludicrous to even suggest by you or anyone else, because I was involved in the redistricting process from day one during COVID, when it started with virtual meetings and on to the very end, March of 2022. And all I said over and over and over, and what I said after the 1990 census, after the 2000 census, and after the 2010 census, keep all of the Riverside neighborhoods together in one district, and we don't care what district it is. And I said that this time over and over and over. And when it looked like City Council was finally going to allow the Riverside neighborhood to be united into one City Council district, which we hadn't been for over 50 years, I also said, and you can go watch the videos, you can read it in the press, we don't care what district we're in. It put us in the north, south, east, west. We do not care. I had no hand in creating District 11. So to suggest that I was somehow trying to dilute the minority representation is just, you know, really beyond comprehension. I don't know how anybody can even make that claim. But it's just another political ploy, you know, used in this race.
Well, my neighborhood was split and, you know, really affected the numbers as well. But, I mean, you can say what you
want.
So
you know why we wanted to have our neighborhood together then? You understand why?
Well, I can understand that, yeah. But, you know, ours didn't work that way. But you can say what you want to say doesn't make it true.
No, that's why I was at every single meeting to fight for my neighborhood, to make sure that we got what we've been fighting for since the 1992 redistricting. This was my fourth redistricting process to go through. I had no hand in creating District 11 at whatsoever. We just wanted our neighborhoods to be in one district together. Other people created District 11, and ultimately the City Council created District 11.
No citizens had
a right to do it.
I was part of the conversation. Okay.
When they called to say, what do you think about putting Riverside in District 11, I was like, sure, fine, whatever. I mean, we don't care what district we're in. We just all want to be together.
Well, I would just throw in real quick, whatever hype got stirred into something functional with government trying to freaking toggle a racially profiled representation district, I'm just going to sit there and say that City Council and government, and that is completely against the Constitution of the United States. I'm a Hispanic person, and I would love to see the representation of Hispanics, but the way that they went about the thematics of that was completely raw-dogging and disenfranchising. You just have to say, two wrongs don't make a right. You can't throw race around like that, you know.
Well, we're going to build something with District 11, but this is the worst gerrymandered district Fort Worth has ever had. And the City Council rejected the idea that was put forward by the Race and Cultural Task Force to have an independent redistricting commission. I'm fully in support of that. City Council didn't want to do that, and we ended up the way it is now.
Right.
We need a more diverse City Council. Really, with the demographics where they are, there should be three Hispanic representatives up there. There's only one. And so,
but there's a democratic process. I mean,
And that's what we're doing now. Nobody's guaranteeing that me as a Latina is going to win, but we're going to fight for it.
I mean, you have affirmative action in employment, but there's no affirmative action in politics. People got to activate, people got to motivate, people got to organize and mobilize, and that's just the way it works. We can't have healthy, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely, and that's what we're doing. We're out there every day knocking on doors, poll greeting, getting folks out to vote, and so we're definitely working the process.
Ms. Martinez, thank you so much
yes.
for your time tonight.
Thank
I know
you.
We've gone over. I appreciate you. Thank you. Good luck with your race.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Good night. So, Mr. Herring, you're the last man standing on the show tonight. So, listen, I see another hand is raised. We're going to go back to the phone line. 682-445, good evening. You're on Let's Talk for Work. 682-445. Hello? Listen, y'all, if you raise your hand, if you press 1, that says you want to be in the host queue. So when I call out your precinct, first 4 digits of your number, that's you. Hello, 682-445. Okay.
I don't know if it's them or not.
Is who? 682-445. Okay, we're moving
That
on.
Might be me.
Okay, is that you? Okay, I don't know. I don't know who that is. For whatever reason, they did not respond. So, Mr. Herring, you know, a lot's going on with this District 11. It seems like they took everything that they didn't want of the areas where there were low voter turnout, the were a lot of maybe people who were not registered voters, a lot of areas where you know, people were maybe not legals, and put it all over into one district. And to me, that's what makes District 11. Would you agree?
Yes. If I followed you correctly, Carrie, I do think that, you know, it's been said, and I'm part of District 11, and I'm going to love it, and mm-hmm. we're going to build it into something that we can all be proud of. To me, it's going to be the district of neighborhoods and parks, because that's the best thing we have to build on. And those are wonderful things to build on. I mean, that's the building blocks of the city. But quite frankly, the areas that were given up to make up District 11 were the neighborhoods that nobody else wanted. And other than our fantastic neighborhoods and some of our beautiful parks that we have, and we also have the James Gwynn complex, which is on 35 in Rosedale, in just that little mm-hmm. bitty sliver that connects Southside to the rest of District 11. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the assets we have. We don't have any great employment centers. We don't have even Texas Wesleyan was carved out of District 11, and it's a very odd shape. So, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to work with what we have. And, again, that's mm-hmm. wonderful. Beautiful, stable, old neighborhoods that are made up of working class and middle class people, and our beautiful natural amenities. East Fort Worth has some of the most beautiful scenery and rolling vistas in all of the city. And again, and we have great parks, and we're going to build on what we do have, and we're going to go forward.
You know, Mr. Herring, Let me finish this. You're an openly gay man, and recently the mayor comprised the book list for children's reading this summer, and I think some of the books were gay pride books, and she came under some backlash because of it, and she took those books off of that list. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I didn't agree with that, and this isn't a criticism of the mayor. She has a really tough job, but I do understand part of that comes with making those tough decisions. But I really couldn't agree with that decision, and I believe our library staff said that they had not been asked before to remove books. To me, and this goes into some other things as well, I think ultimately it's a parent's responsibility to decide what their children are allowed to read, what they're exposed to. And, you know, that's the way that I approached my parenting. I wanted to be involved in every aspect of my child's life and children's lives and what they were exposed to. So, no, I couldn't, support what the mayor did. But, again, that's not a direct criticism because I know she was probably getting a lot of pressure, but I'm not sure that was the best decision that was made.
Well, Mr. Harry, you know what? I understand that this is a personal thing, but I'm a person who's who's very tolerant as an adult, but really what nobody wants to acknowledge, we can shut this whole controversy down about sexuality, okay? Because I am a person that believes that personality does not actually dictate sexuality, you know? And so, you know, that's the whole problem that we have going on here. But my problem is I would disagree with you in that the government has no place. And when there is a theme of sexuality in a book that the public library is propagating and promoting, that's a problem. Whether it be heterosexual, whether it be, I mean, you and me both come, you're probably a little bit older than me, but I come from the time when Catcher in the Rye was even a little bit raw, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm an ultra conservative kind of person, you know what? But I'm not a cruel, mean, demeaning kind of person. I have a gay aunt and a gay uncle, and there's really no problem. I mean, I knew how Fort Worth was in the 70s and 80s, and it was, I think you can agree with me that we were a lot more, that the way the setup was in the 70s and 80s was a lot more comfortable for everybody than it is now. You know, I mean, it just is what it is. And, you know, sexuality is a topic that's not up for taxpayer funding. Sexuality is not up for a proposition of cultural reformation by government functions. That's just where I'm at with that. And I'm not I'm not demeaning you at all, sir. But I think that I think that you have that conviction. But there is this new wave, this new age, this new millennium kind of way of thinking that is not conducive to a true civic structure for consensus.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know a lot of people agree with you on that, and I'm not necessarily disagreeing, but what I'm saying is that if I don't feel like it's active promotion of a certain lifestyle, sexuality, whatever, to have books included in a collection in the library. If that is the case, then, you know, I may have more objections to that, but I just don't see it as promoting a certain ideology.
Right. We're not talking about what books are in the library. I don't have no problem with the books that they were being in the library. This was about a summer reading program for children that had a book list. The government was earning badges for
right. –
Why don't we have a badge for biblical studies? No, we have a badge.
Hey,
I'm not trying to have battle with you on that. But this is the true context of the situation. I have no problem with those books being on the shelf. I have no problem with a librarian servicing those books to the patrons of that library. What I have is a problem is that the mayor and the public library throwing up a programming that promotes a pride badge that children, you can earn a badge for pride studies. It's just not. I mean, I'm not.
Hey.
And I'm not anti-gay, bro. I'm really not.
I believe you, and I don't know what else was on the reading list. But I would be all in favor of having a biblical studies or, you know, a well-rounded reading list. I am a Christian, so but I don't think that saying that makes it, you know, it should be exclusively Christian materials either. But I'm for a well-rounded reading list, and quite frankly, I don't know what else was on it because the only thing that made it into the press that I saw were those books that were objectionable.
Well, I'm just going to end it. I think we can both agree that sexuality is not a topic for children's reading. That's it.
Yes. Okay.
Hey,
Jesse, your question.
Can I give up?
That was Adrian. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So just an observation. I know Ms. Martinez is not on here, so I'll just try to keep my questioning as it relates to it. So, Mr. Heron, this is an observation of mine that I hope to see, because I feel like not only I'm concerned about the whole of Fort Worth. I know that we all have council representatives that represent us, but when I come down to redress council, any constituents from any district, because I feel like if it's an issue for it over in their district, it can then be an issue in my district. It could be an issue for all of Fort Worth. So I say this. As a council representative, I think one of the greatest tools you will have at your disposal is council proposals. I think those are just like what senators do when they draft bills, a council proposal. So what I've noticed is if you are elected, you'll get a taste of it. They have this new age council, which I think is what they're trying to be, this new age council. They have begun the process of fast-tracking everything. We no longer know what we're voting on. We no longer know what they're voting on. Basically, they just fast track everything. It's like a microwave city council. So I will hope to inspire you, because again, we're going to need somebody that's going to be able to be themselves. Propose council proposals. Those bring about change. You might not get the votes, but I think that will show your constituents that, hey, I put this on the table regardless if they voted on it or didn't. If they voted for it, cool. If they didn't vote for it, then let your constituents know, hey, this is what I propose. Also, I believe one voice is as important as 10 voices. So anytime there's opposition to anything in your district, I've noticed anytime there's opposition to anything in a particular district, if one person comes down there, they usually kind of just blow them off. You know what I'm saying? But again, one voice is important as 10 voices. So I would hope that you would, and I believe you would, treat the one voice just as you would treat 10 voices, 20 voices, 1,000 voices. And I would say this last observation. Please, I lost my train of thought. But more or less, I'm just talking about you as a council representative. Please just stand on something. I know you're going to stand on principles. Know you will be challenged. Know that, the redress of council. We have some council members who have made everything personal. So when we come down there to redress them about things, they, for some reason, they wear their feelings on their sleeves. I hope that you will not be someone who wears his personal feelings on his sleeve when redressed. We try to keep everything in respect as to not, you know, respect. You give respect to get respect. You know, this, that, or the other. But as a council representative, I hope that you will be yourself, and just stand on something and push this district. Since they gave you this new district, it's up to you to do whatever it is needs to be done for this district. And know this last observation. They will not go against your vote. No council member goes against the other council member. That's your district. So however you vote, that's how they're gonna walk in line. They shouldn't vote against you. So just keep that in mind.
Well, thank you, Mr. Smith. And I just a couple of things about that. I don't wear my feelings on my sleeve, and I try to speak my mind in a respectful way. And I think that's one reason that some people don't want to see me on council. But you said give respect and listen to the one person that comes down and speaks on an issue. And I can promise you I will do that, because many times in the last 30 years I've been that one person who stood before council, and it can be very intimidating. It can be very uncomfortable. And I've lived that. And I've lived with the frustration of not knowing what's coming to my neighborhood. You said the microwave council or whatever. There's nothing worse as a citizen than being surprised by something that's going to happen in your neighborhood that you never heard anything about, or you didn't hear about it in time to address it, whether you were for it or against it. And that's my pledge to all the residents of District 11. When I have information, unless it's, something that has to be kept confidential for legal reasons or whatever, but when I have information about something, I want to get it out to my the residents of District 11 as soon as possible so they can know as much as I know, because that's how I want to be treated as a citizen, and I haven't always felt that.
I agree. Let's go back to the phone line.
Go ahead.
Let's go to the phone line. 314-677, good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hello, Carrie. How are you doing?
Fine,
you know,
how
are you? I volunteered for the Convention of States Article 5. And they have a network where any bill that's coming up, and also bills that that COS will join on to, we are given text messages and emails on those bills. For instance, just this week alone, we have four bills to pass. One prevents children from under 18 years of age from undergoing those transformation surgeries and giving puberty blocking drugs. We had another one that we're working on to give parents the fundamental rights over their children. Another one which prevents foreign entities from owning land over here in Louisiana. And there's another one which allows the Bible to be studied in school, and also another one for putting In God We Trust on the building. So through that method, we're able to get members of COS to email and text members of the legislature as much as 800 or 900 and saying, yes, we're for this or we're against that. So that's something that needs to be talked about and thought about. It works.
I'm totally on. Hey, Mr. Yankee. Hey, Mr. Yankee.
Yes, sir.
Yankee.
Hello. Hey, I'm completely with the COS movement, and I appreciate your contribution and everything. I mean, right now we don't have – I respect what you're saying and everything, but I don't think we're dealing with that kind of a controversy here with this. We're trying to get to some – I'm totally on board with you, but we're trying to get some productive stuff talking about local stuff going on here, and I'm totally with you. You know, I think we clarified – I don't think that this candidate is trying to advocate anything on that extreme level. You know, I really don't.
Let me just comment on that, if I may. I'm a firm believer that city council needs to focus on what city council is supposed to be doing and not get into areas that are beyond the purview of the council. That's what we have the legislature for. Other officials, county officials, whoever, federal. But I think the city council should stay focused on what the city council can do, and it doesn't include a lot of those areas that are, you know, being discussed in Austin. But one thing about the COS, and I'm sorry I'm not real familiar with it, but I do like the idea of the communication part, the texting, the emails, or whatever, because I'm all about communicating. And, I just want to make sure that the residents of District 11 have information as timely as they can, whether they agree with – whether it's something they disagree with me about or not, that's fine. But I think everybody needs to have the information so they can make their own informed decisions.
I agree. Thank you, Bianchi.
Yeah, I just don't want to keep going into the weeds on it.
You know what, Rick, I have a question. Pierre Wilson – came out and endorsed you, which I thought that was very interesting, because at one point I think she did not agree with you, and now they say that she is endorsing you. What is that all about? Can you elaborate?
Well, yeah, I'd be glad to. I'm very glad to have Tara's endorsement. I'll just start off by saying that. And Tara and I have known each other for several years because she had run for city council before in the district that we were both in, which was previously District 4. So I had an opportunity to know her through some of that. But on this campaign, we got to know each other a lot better. And just in spending time together and visiting, you know, we really found out that we had a lot more common ground than we did not. And I think that went into a lot of her decision-making, and I know it was very difficult for her, being a Latina, and many of the things that she discussed on the campaign trail. I'm sure that was a hard decision for her. But I appreciated it very much. But at the end of the day, what it boils down to is that sort of our you know, goals for the district were more aligned than they weren't aligned. And I'll just tell you the number, well, maybe not number one, but one of the most important things was that we want the people of District 11 to choose their own representative. We don't want outside influences saying this is who you have to have or this is mm-hmm. the best person. Let the voters of District 11 decide who they want. And if it's not me, that is perfectly fine. I hope it is me, obviously. But let the voters decide and don't be influenced by, you know, outsiders basically saying this is who you have to have. And I'm not going to say anything that Ms. Martinez can't respond to. I don't think that would be fair since she's not here. Mm-hmm. But I'm just going to talk about my own campaign contributions and donors. You know, 75% of people that have given me money from small amounts to larger amounts are residents of District 11. And
oh, wow.
That is not the case with, you know, with others. But most of my support is coming from within the district and across a broad segment of the population, Hispanic, African-American, white, age groups, all demographics. I have had wide support in those areas. I did very well in Southeast Fort Worth. And, you know, so again, it comes down to me to respect and dignity. Let the residents of District 11 choose who they want and let all the outsiders stay out.
Rick, we already know on this show. Hey, Rick, we already know on this show that not just with this race, but in several other races, especially over there in six, we already know that there was a lot of interplay going on, and I didn't get to address it with her, but the representation that Ms. Martinez had about the whole thing going on with Galvan, that's not the way that I'm reading that. I'm reading that somebody approached Ms. Galvan and told her to tap out so that they could push. That's just my interpretation, but we don't need to get into that. I want to reach into something. I want to go back to what we were talking about when you were saying that you want ideas about promoting, you know, promoting things for youth and everything. So it's what I'm saying is I believe the Panther Island plan should be revised to be a Dell Diamond style venue and a youth sports complex, a safe place for young people to come and participate in sports activities instead of dodging bullets and getting sucked into the vice activity that is prolific in the city. And so on that is that this Panther Island program is something that you're a historian, and I'm coming from the 70s. In the 70s, bro, and in the 80s, this city was on the move, and something happened in the 90s where people stopped mattering, and it became about profits and politics in Fort Worth. And the Fort I don't like to use the term in a racial context or anything, but as far as what I'm talking about historically, and if you know, I saw it happen. It started out with the Bluff Street area, right there northeast of the courthouse. They let that area was crime ridden and it was a problem down there towards Samuels. Let it go on and on and on for 10, 15 years. And then all of a sudden they came in with bulldozers. And that goes back to my heritage because I had family that used to live there back from the 40s or whatever. There was some historical stuff happened. Those bluffs are a city heritage treasure. And they just came in with bulldozers. And there was a little bit of eminent domain going on, a whole lot of bullshit going on, but that was the first project that turned into this thing that then went over into the near south side and into the Seminary South. You know, Seminary, the Seminary Mall turned into La Grand Plaza. We got a problem, sir, and I think you know it as a historian of this Fort Worth. And you said something that really touched me, that you got five generations deep roots in this city. And I can respect that. And I'm coming from the 1970s when we had Mr. Peppermint and Muffin, you know, on channel, you know, I think you remember that. And
yeah.
We had the Tandy Center, and Fort Worth was poised to become a great city. We had a subterranean subway system right there right there at the Tandy Center. And then something happened in the 90s, and everything just got derailed. And now we are dealing with a train wreck. And I believe that train wreck has to do with the downtown ink click mentality that's going on with this high density profit and politics over people. And what's happening, and nobody's sitting here saying, we know that this Panther Island, there's no way, there's no contingency for the people here. What this is a magnet for out of state, the people from California who can sell their house and their business for $500,000 to a couple of million dollars, and they know that this city is booming. So those people are coming in here, and it is completely depressing the upward mobility, and it's turning into generational tenancy for the lower, our median income right now, our median income is like around 40 maybe maximum $45,000 a year, sir. And if you aren't making, with what's going on right now, if your family income is not over $100,000, your life is going down the drain in Fort Worth. And there's people and businesses that Panther Island development is going to drive into the ground.
Yeah. Well, let me just address some of your concerns, if I may. I mean, not your – all of that's concerning, I know. We all definitely have an affordable housing crisis in the city, and there's different ways that people want to approach that. But I want to go back to what you started with finding – doing something for youth. What I want to promote is the area around Gateway Park, which is a very centrally located area in Fort Worth. Gateway Park is the largest park in the Fort Worth park system, and it's got great plans going forward. And there's been $8 million set aside to redo the master plan. And I will be a big part of that, whether I'm on council or not. I'm going to make myself a part of it. But the land surrounding Gateway is vacant, and I want to see that be used for athletic complexes for the youth of our city. It's in the perfect location. There's no need for us to put, you know, all this huge soccer complex up in far north Fort Worth where it's going to benefit Keller, or way out west where it's going to benefit Aledo. We need it in the central city in a good location, and people from all over the Metroplex can utilize it, but especially our central city youth. And that doesn't solve every problem that we've discussed or anything else, but at least it's a start, and it's something in our community that we can be proud of.
And I'll be real quick and clear about something that here was the boulder on the track that derailed everything in Fort Worth, I believe. When they started to go north with the Alliance development in the early 90s, the Alliance Airport development, and they all of the massive thrust northward, you know. This is what I have a problem with. Is like I said, we had subway system. We were a prototype before Austin was a prototype. Before Dallas had DART, we had a subterranean subway system in Fort Worth. Before Dallas had that, all of the light rail transit that they have. Okay. And in the 90s, Fort Worth just said, we're going to build this massive complex where probably 20% of the employability from downtown Fort Worth. I used to work up there at Nokia Mobile Phones, and there was people that come in from Forest Hill to work out there. And I'm just saying, it is somebody needs to go, I don't know, somebody needs to be wrapped around a tree and whipped for not having the insight to sit there and say, light rail from the south side, the I-35 corridor, a monorail, like they got at Disneyland, or something, right through the middle of 35 all the way up north. And then all the way on 170 over to Roanoke. Yeah, but
they care, Jim.
That's the problem we got.
Well, I'm with you on that. I think that Alliance has been a great economic engine for Fort Worth, and I'm glad we have it. But we need mass transit to move our workers to these employment centers, to Alliance, to the medical district, to the Lockheed area. I'm not in favor of light rail or mass transit to move tourists around, but I'm completely in favor of it to move workers where they need to get from their homes to their employment centers.
Right, I agree with you there, and we just we totally dropped the ball on that. You know, Austin.
I think Kerry.
Chris, you might let somebody else ask the questions too.
My bad.
Rick, you know, you're on the east side. There's a lot going on in terms of not enough grocery stores over here. Do you have any plans on how to deal with the food desert issues over here?
I have an idea, Kerry, and I'm going to work on this. I said this in there was a District 11 candidate forum that was held in Meadowbrook, and I think it was April 3rd, and it brought people from all over the district, from Southside, from Southeast, from Riverside into Meadowbrook, because it was kind of a central area to meet. Mm-hmm. And it was put on by all the neighborhood associations. But anyway, at that forum, the same question came up, and I said, you know, I know this isn't going to be a popular answer, but I just have to say what I believe and be honest about it. I think it's going to be a very difficult challenge to get a major grocery chain to come to the east side or to, you know, parts of District 11. Years ago, some of you may remember, we got a Menards at Miller and Berry, and it was very important for that neighborhood to have, as you said, it was a food desert, and to have a full-scale supermarket. But there were a lot of incentives given to make that happen. We can work on doing that again, but I'm thinking that to try to be successful in attracting a grocery store, it's probably going to need to be something of a smaller footprint, maybe like an Aldi or a Walmart neighborhood market, and not, you know, something else. I just, you know, I know that's disappointing to people to hear me say that, but I think we have to be realistic. I will fight for that. I most definitely will. But, you know, it hasn't been proven to be an easy task.
Mm-hmm. That's what we were wondering. Why population it is over here, why it's so difficult to get, you know, a grocery store over here. It's just crazy. There's some questions for you. Wayman Brown, by the way, we came to you. You didn't hear us when we came to you. 682-445. We came earlier. Good evening, Wayman. And then Amanda Mata.
Hey, can you hear me?
We can.
Can you hear me? All right, great
job. Sir.
Yeah, I had to get another phone, and it was dropping calls, so I'm in a good area right now. But I heard a lot of what Ms. Martinez said. I did have a whole host of questions for her, but that'll wait to another time. Mr. Herring, I have heard your platform as well. A lot of what Chris was mentioning up to you. Now, I'm a kid from the 60s, and I could run you down on a whole lot of the history of South Side and the Southeast Fort Worth, particularly in the areas of where you are now, particularly in Riverside, that you reside. And a lot of that, let me be the first to tell you, a lot of that is based on gentrification. When we want to talk about history in the city of Fort Worth, Chris said he don't know what happened. Well, let me explain to you. When Frank Kent blew up his own building, come on now, when he blew up that before they put the freeway in, there was a mass exodus of all those businesses that were down there off the south side. We're talking about from Lancaster and downtown all the way up to Evans and 35. And all of those businesses cleared out within a three-year span of time. We're talking about from 1970 all the way up to 1973, 74. That was also the end of segregation. And it was the ending process of moving from segregation to integration. So all the schools that were open on the south side at that time shut down, and they dispersed them throughout the city of Fort Worth. I myself have went to Ernest Parker right there on Jennings and Rosedale. That was a school, Nassau Condominium. But there were so many kids that went from that went to that school that it covered all the way, all of the south side, from Riverside and Berry all the way up to 35 in Berry, down to Vickery and 35, all the way down to 287 in Vickery. So it covered all of that plus the Butler Housing Project. So when they broke my school up, we had enough kids to go to every school in the city of Fort Worth out of one school, and we were not overpopulated. What we were a school unified. We were a community unified. Everybody knew everybody. And one of the things, Rick, you said earlier that was right on point, you are getting what nobody else wanted because you are getting the leftover of integration. See, we just had a teacher a couple of years ago, over in Riverside complaining about the student population that was going across the Riverside. Well, how are you going to complain about a student going to a school to where your government said they had to go? And then when they had to go there, the common sense thing was, well, since you got to go there, we might as well start living where close to school. So when the family moved where the school was, all of a sudden now you got these individuals that have the mindset of saying, well, I'm still not satisfied. They need to move. That's where we are right now. That's what you're dealing with. When we talk about the monorail system, I ran for city council in 2019. A lot of the things the brother just brought up, those are the very thing I had on my platform. Why haven't we had a monorail system? I mean, you know, it was there before DART. It was there before we had anything. All you had to do was just broaden your mind on it. We had a bus system that actually picked up the workers from the communities, took them to work, and they came on, and the buses came on a shift. If they worked the first shift, the bus was at 4:30 in the morning to get them out to Lockheed Martin, to get them over here to General Dynamics, to get them to General Motors, to get them to Bell Helicopter, and you had a bus that was switched. Once they dropped those guys off, those guys worked the overnight shift, got on the bus, came home. So
I agree, and I thought it was the stupidest 15 years ago.
Let him finish.
Tollway bullshit. They went into this tollway bullshit when they already knew they were behind the curve.
Well, the tollway thing came from your governor, George W. Bush. That's who that came from. So he had a self-interest in that, but again, we playing Texas politics above. Well, it had something to do also with our city and local government. Because don't think nothing has gone on that happened in Fort Worth that hadn't already been up in Austin.
Bill Meadows.
Trust me.
Bill Meadows.
We know. So what we have to do is Fort – and, Rick, they separated everything for a reason. Do you realize that if you – build around Gateway Park. You know what that unifies? You now unify the north side. You unify Poly. You unify the south side. You unify Woodhaven. You unify Meadowbrook. See, you done brought all these collectives together again. And that's what they don't want that. Because if you have one people with one mind and we all start seeing the same problem, we all going to come up with the same solution.
Well, that's one reason. I think, yes, Gateway Park could be an engine for District 11 in East Fort Worth, and we could make good things happen there. And I'm not saying there aren't some good things happening now, but we've got to protect that vacant land that's around there so that we don't get, you know, four-story warehouses that we don't want. We got to have something that's going to complement the community and bring the community together.
Yep. Now, get this. Now, many of us in Fort Worth that have been here a long time, we know this. It was the city, Pete Gaines, it was the city that was putting out that Gateway Park was not a good place to attend. And they were using scare tactics.
Yeah.
And they were saying, well, you know, it's a lot of homosexuals hang out at Gateway Park.
Yeah.
Hell, you can go to the Rangers game and find a lot of people that's gay. You can go to the Cowboy Stadium and find the same thing. But they're not saying that about those places, are they? So you had a whole lot of people. You got a whole lot of people with their own self-vested in maintaining that land for something different. Just like they cleaned out the south side of Fort Worth, and they waited 30 years later, and now all of a sudden they come in with these bright new ideas. And Brother Christopher, he's correct. They did bring in people and developers from up north. But the development that they're trying to use up there, it doesn't work here.
No.
Because we may have more land, but you're trying to put a smaller connection place in a large venue, because when you go down Magnolia, they don't have alleyways anymore to where you do your delivery. You have to now pull into the turning lane, and they do their deliveries from the middle of the street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if anybody's ever been to New York or upstate, anywhere like that, that's how they do it. That's not going to work here. So Fort Worth is one of these places, man, we got a bunch of folks that got in it for the money. Because it makes no sense to have all of that money, particularly when it came when the Texas Lotto was pumping it in education.
Yeah.
And then that flipped and said, we're going to put it in TxDOT, when the people clearly voted, we need it for education. And now what are they doing? They're building individual schools, but it's not part of the public school system. Go ahead, Rick.
No, I was just going to say, I agree with you on that. The lottery was supposed to solve all of our school problems, right? And it didn't deliver. But, I was just going to say that you bring up a lot of good points. And, you know, I am a history lover, and sounds like you are too, and you've lived that history. I'd love another opportunity to speak with you sometime, and you can fill me in on some things.
Not a problem.
That'll
but
work.
Not
okay,
a problem.
Wait a minute.
Oh,
Michelle, we want to get in touch with you.
2 minutes.
Yes.
Huh? Say again, Michelle,
let me suggest something, Rick. Christopher,
okay. Can you let them?
Rick. Rick, the thing that I'm saying is that this Panther Island project is the head of the snake. If you want what you want at Gateway Park, you need to come in and you need to advocate that they revision the Panther Island development, not for high-density condominiums that's going to force a tsunami of gentrification through the north side and the east side and Stop 6, all of that. You need to stop that. We need a Dell Diamond like they got in Round Rock. We need the Fort Worth Cats, and we need a Jackie Robinson youth sports complex going on right there on Panther Island.
Okay, we got to get to the
I think I understand your concerns, but, you know, it's that's a pretty tall order to turn back the clock on Panther Island. But maybe we could talk about that offline sometime. But
right.
I'm sorry, Carrie, were you asking me for my contact info?
I was trying to tell Wayman how y'all could exchange information or how he could get in contact with you.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me do this, Mr. Brown. Let me just go ahead and give my information. My website is rickherringforfortworth.com.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also on Facebook, Rick Herring for Fort Worth. But on my website, I mean, you can contact me through Facebook or Instagram. It's all the same, Rick Herring for Fort Worth. But on the website, it has a place to contact me. I'll get your emails, and we can try to connect. Now, it's going to have to be after June 10th because I've got a few things going on until then. like 24/7,
problem.
I really would love to visit sometime.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I got you, and I'll just make contact that way. And when you're available, just holler at me.
I sure will, sir, and I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Manuel Mata has a question. Manuel Mata. Adrian.
Oh no, Carrie. Manuel dropped off. He dropped off.
Okay.
I do apologize. Yes. Manuel dropped off.
Okay. No problem. Okay, so we're down to our last 5 minutes of the show. Rick, tell them why they need to vote for you.
Okay. Well, I have 30 years, actually more than 30 years, experience working in our city, starting in my own neighborhood, and that was sort of in a decline. We tried to do everything we could to stabilize it. And to me, that's one of the most important things. Stabilize your neighborhood, and then you can work on improving it. But through all those years, three decades of working in my own neighborhood, it allowed me to work with City Hall. It allowed me to be appointed to the Zoning Commission, to the Planning Commission, to other boards and commissions and a lot of city committees. And I've just had an opportunity be in City Hall and see how it works, see how our council operates, and I just feel like my background and experience in those areas can benefit all of District 11, and I don't have to, I'm not egotistical enough or arrogant enough to think that I know everything about what a city council person knows and does. That would just, you know, that would be outrageous to make that claim, but I do think that I have a great head start on my opponent in having that knowledge base, and I feel like I can get to work on day one after I'm elected without having to learn as much and learn as much as the people and the personnel as others may have to. And as I said earlier, and I have, you know, developed this map that already shows some immediate citizen priorities that I want to start working on throughout the district, all over the district. Some of it has to do with, you know, better policing of these game rooms that are just blights in our neighborhoods, in our older neighborhoods. You know, just I mentioned the Echo Heights, but there's all kinds of things like that. Making sure that we don't get inappropriate zoning where we don't want it, and I want to respect the people that live in the communities and in the neighborhoods and work with them on what they want to see. And I feel like I'm the person who can do that and the best person for the job. And I just ask that you would consider my qualifications against my opponent and, you know, come out and support me. We have early voting going on right now through this Tuesday, and then actual election day is Saturday, June 10th, a week from tomorrow.
Right, child. That was Mr. Rick Herring, one of the finalists in the District 11 City Council race. Listen, I'd like to say thank you to Rick Herring and Jeanette Martinez for stopping by tonight and spending time with us, informing us about who they are as the candidate. We'd like to thank you also, the audience, for listening. Listen, early voting has already started. It started May 30th, and it's going to run through June 6th. And Election Day, as he just said, is June 10th. Make sure you vote, y'all. Make sure you vote this time. If you have a product, a service, a nonprofit, any type of business that you'd like to get the word out about, consider advertising right here on Let's Talk Footwork. Also, follow us on Facebook. Y'all, listen, our Let's Talk Footwork Facebook page is always popping. We're always doing polls, listen, posting stuff about what's going on, engaging the followers. It's always something going on that page. And so definitely follow us on Let's Talk Footwork. Listen, if you got a news tip, keep them coming, y'all. Send me a line at Let's Talk Footwork at AOL.com. That's Let's Talk Footwork at AOL.com. And if it's something in line with what we do here, we will definitely, definitely do a show on it. And also, we got some really great guests that are lining up for 2022. Y'all got to be tuned. It's a lot about to go down right here on Let's Talk Footwork. So keep it locked right here on Let's Talk Footwork every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. as we tell you exactly what they're doing downtown. All right, y'all, until next Friday, good night.